please continue with what you're saying about Therese.
I should backtrack a bit about that. Very too much. She got her master's degree, but she didn't, and she taught for the rest of the year, but then things came along and she stopped working. And our best year really was in England at the time of my sabbatical after the war. That was a very successful year. I wrote this method book. Emily was, we had an old house, you know, really, really old house there, beautiful place. And we're right next to a little village. And we got really incorporated into the life of that village. She used to play the organ for the Sunday school and go to the women's club meetings and so on. She really had a, it was a wonderful year for both of us. And when she got suddenly ill, I was in England. Well, that was hard. All I could say is it was tough because I couldn't communicate half the time. Telephone system in Britain was just atrocious, you know. And
this was in
1951, 52. This was 49, 51, 52, I think so.
Oh, wait a minute, no.
49, 50, I think it was.
No, it was. That was the period that you were at Oxford.
That's right.
But then.
That's what I'm speaking about, is the Oxford.
The Oxford period.
At first, I mean, that's when the book was written. Then later, I was in England just for a trip, you see.
How about the year in Washington? Did Emily and the family enjoy that, or was that a.
Well, not too terrifically, I'd say. It was all secret. I couldn't tell about what I was doing at all. We only had one car, and I didn't drive the car every day, but I don't know. It wasn't an overwhelming success.
Going back, did you and Emily talk a lot about science?
To a certain extent, but not in detail, you see, because, I mean, yes and no. Probably too much. I mean, Kenneth obviously had it absorbed. He took a very, he was demanding of my time.
Well, I remember the summer we stayed in your house when you were on working on the book with Decius and Cross. I ran across some of Kenneth's math papers, and I was just overwhelmed at what he was doing at that time.
Yes.
It was group theory, I think, rather advanced group theory of some kind.
He was certainly very advanced and questioning all the time. Did meet Therese at a critical point, and
I interrupted your commenting about you were in England when Emily became ill.
That's right. As I say, it was very dreadful for me because first I had great difficulty in communicating because the telephone system was so bad. There was really only one public telephone in Oxford anywhere near there. And it, of course, was either occupied or out of order half the time. And then getting back, I went over on a MATS, a transport, because I don't know, in our contract. And I couldn't go back. As soon as I heard, got the word, they were sick, they were serious, I tried to get home. And I did get home in a few days, but it took a few days to get on a plane. And it was rough. And then she died almost immediately after I got home.
It must have been very fast.
very sad.
No warning, any indication?
Well, you know, she hadn't been in good health, but we never figured out, people hadn't figured out what it was. I don't know why they didn't, but it was an obvious incompetence.
There was leukemia, was it?
Leukemia, yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, now on to Therese.
Yes, we met and we got married pretty quick soon. I don't know, a few months. I wasn't going to let her go back home. So we got married quickly. And as I say, she has a PhD. She's doing research with George. And so we. Then
did she continue with her research until the children came?
Or? She continued with her research at first, and then had a sabbatical after a couple of years. We went to Geneva for the sabbatical, and Anne was born in Geneva. And the three children are a year apart. Anne and Paul are a year plus or minus a couple of days. And Paul is a year, and Stephen's a year, 2 months younger.
And what are these children doing?
Well, Paul is a graduate, Anne first, has had an amazing experience. She has been about seven or eight expeditions to the jungles of the Amazon in Peru, studying monkeys, special kind of little monkey. So she's writing a thesis now at Ann Arbor, University of Michigan, in behavior, by behavior of biology, animal behavior, especially these little monkeys. And she has found that they're quite special in that they are, often have two males and one female in the family. And let's say she's been down there, she's accumulated a vast amount of detailed data on these behavioral qualities. She is married, and I don't know what is going to happen. She's now writing a thesis, putting it together, and I think this spring she'll certainly get a degree. And what will happen next, we don't know.
The next is Paul.
Paul is a graduate student. He's a graduate student at Berkeley in biology also, but entirely different. I mean, he's looking at frog embryo and how they go and differentiate, and particularly how they control patterns. And
sounds somewhat similar to Doty's current interest in differentiation of collagen.
Uh-huh. Well, this is a great field for study, this question of why does this cell become an ear and not in a big toe and so on. Paul is quite mathematically gifted. Well, he's had a checkered career so far, put it that way. As he did physics and was an undergraduate. General relativity. His thesis was an application of general relativity. He went from there and fooled around a little bit while, and then he went to London a year at the London School of Economics, and where he got, I might say, a distinction. What do they call it? Degree with a distinction or something like that. And then he worked for a while for an MIT professor, had big contracts in South America. So he was He worked on that, and he actually briefed the South American people on the results of the MIT work. A big meeting they had down there. Then he, then he switched over to biology, which he had studied quite a bit of in Princeton, and he's still working at it. I hope he, I think he's permanently, well, permanent's a long word, but I think he is well launched, and he's been out there 3 years now. They've treated him extremely well. I'm really enormously impressed by the way these group professors have treated Paul.
Now, Stephen.
Well, Stephen went to Harvard, but he didn't finish. He dropped out. Did sociology. He dropped out in his junior, at the end of his junior year, to set up a little company. But he'd worked as a technician at the, in this biology building. And building little gadgets that were essentially analog to digital boxes, controls and things. So he developed a little box that you could hitch up to a computer, a home computer, and then to some apparatus and make it automate the apparatus, automate the scientific experiment. And this was still running, the first box he made. He made several in hand wire. And then he decided, oh, seems to be a need for this thing, why not make a company? And he had started this little company. Now, after 5 years, I mean, time flies. And he, his first product was, well, I'll be careful with my remarks, but another company bought it out from him and is still on the market. In fact, it's now switched over to Honeywell, apparently. They're announcing this thing as if it was new. Apparently, it's exactly the same thing. But, okay, that was the first product. And they went to the other company for a prize. And then Stephen decided that he would try to get into the use of personal computers and process control work. And so he's got a real company. Now, he was able to get financing. He first got one man who financed his previous earlier operation, and this man is still involved in the thing. But now there's a whole group of venture capitalists, 5 or 6 of them, who, and they have put quite a lot of money into Kenneth's company.
Mm-hmm. What's the company called?
Data Acquisition Systems Incorporated.
Okay, I've seen their literature. I haven't bought anything from them, but I know about it. I want to skip from your family and back to your scientific career. Paradoxically, the tape got very noisy at the point where you were talking about 1/F noise and Stark modulation. So let's clarify that a little bit. I particularly missed what you had to say about observing the spectrum of ammonia and the vast signal noise improvement you saw.
Well, of course, the reason why it was better, I didn't know at the time, was because the 1/F noise was the limiting noise. And when we were modulating by Stark modulation, actually at 100 kilocycles. So we'd switch from practically zero in the ordinary non-modulated system, just the sweep frequency, to 100 kilocycles, and that made quite a bit of difference in the 1/F noise, of course. As I say, I didn't know about that at that time, but we were doing it because it seemed a good idea. I guess the primitive notion to modulate, you you throw out stuff that doesn't dissociate with modulation. And of course it does that too. And it was very striking, the improvement in the signal of noise. It's great, many, certainly various number of powers of 10.
He was also, he published a paper on a an electrical secular determinant solver.
That's right. Well, let's forget about that.
I didn't want to forget about it. You had it hanging on the, rack, I think, in your lab when I was in school here. It didn't work well?
It worked, but it's an analog device. You don't build analog machines anymore, usually.
Well, it was...
Sometimes, but... You know, it was too much trouble to change the parameters and so on.
This was a set of pots and resistors, or was it, or what?
Yeah, it was a set of the electrical. This was copied after an earlier mechanical thing that we built.
Okay, that
the mechanical thing was sort of pendulum and springs. It was strictly analog.
Did you publish on the mechanical one? I seem to recall it.
I don't think I was able to find
it in the publication list.
I don't think you did. You built one that worked pretty well. It was sort of a nuisance to use. That isn't worth spending the time on.
These devices, are they no longer around? Okay, now let's see. I missed also part of what you were saying about the infrared intensity measurement work with Judd Wells. Could you describe that somewhat more?
Yeah, that was something I thought was simple-minded, but I like it. Judd made it work. The problem of measuring infrared intensity, as you well know, is difficult, and you don't have a simple... Well, the main difficulty is that in a typical situation you have rotational lines, a series of rotational transitions and spectral lines. And you shine light through the gas, if this gas is speaking about, you're measuring most in ordinary circumstances, you're measuring how much space there is between the lines rather than the absorption of the lines themselves. And we put together, various people knew various things about this, and what we did was put together the different things that make one system. Really, that if you extrapolate the zero length, the absorption length, for example, you can, or if you get infinite very high resolution, that helps you too, you can beat this problem of making a measurement of the absorption of individual lines when there's great big spaces next to them. Most of the energy is going through the spaces. Anyway, this scheme we have does in principle beat that by extrapolation. And as I say, Judd Wells tried it out and worked fine, and made it work. And it is in use still, I do believe. But nowadays, of course, it's not going to stay in use very much longer because as the laser infrared spectroscopy becomes more convenient, cheaper, that's the only way people are going to do things. And with that resolution, use high resolution, you should change the system, the emphasis at least, of how you do this.
Okay. Now, you said a little bit about Bryce Crawford, and we didn't get much on that. You You did work together with Bryce when he came here, didn't you?
Definitely. We had a group that consisted of Bryce and Fred Stitt, who both had NRC fellowships, I believe. Jack Linnett, who came from Oxford to work with Kistiakowski, who passed him on to me. Harold Asinowitz, as they became the directors, became the director of research at Shell. And, various tankers, Judd Wells, Jack Howard. It was a fantastic collection.
You consider your paper with Crawford on the secular equation for molecular vibrations to be
I don't remember what that one wasn't the most important one, I'm afraid. I'd have to look and see so I got these things. I remember which one that one was. We did work that's the kind of thing Bryce was working on. And I'd rather mention the work which we did together. Actually, we finished it up in a hotel room in New York at some meeting, which was, let me look at it in the listing here, get the name of it. Occasion 21. There are a lot of different forms.
There was a secular equation for molecular vibrations with Crawford in Journal Chemical Physics in 1938.
That's right. That's the one I'm looking at now. I don't believe that was a particularly important paper. I'm just refresh my memory. Which one? Unless we no. See that. There is paper on the mechanical analyzer, but don't forget it. It's not.
Well, let's not.
Look, skip that one. I think that was not. It was all right.
Okay, I just.
But what was a nice one with Bryce Crawford was handling of internal rotation and vibration. That's what I was trying to get my hands on here.
Now, let's see,
the FG business at that time, and this method of obtaining the expanded secular equation, no, that's another scheme.
Well, let's go at it this way. I wanted to come back. First, I wanted to ask you about your books.
Excuse me, I found that.
Oh, fine.
The paper that I wanted to mention about with Crawford was the normal vibrations of molecules with internal torsional motions. That was General Chemical Physics, Volume 9, 1941. I think that was a useful paper. And Bryce, as I say, Bryce and I wrote that in a hotel room in New York one night. We've been thinking about it a lot, of course. And I think that, I don't know who did which, but I would say this is a paper in which Bryce and myself both had real contributions to it, not just.
All right. We'll come back shortly to some specific papers, but I wanted to ask you about how many copies of the Pauling and Wilson quantum chemistry book were sold. Do you recall?
Never found out. At some earlier point, we used to know the numbers, but
it had a large.
Certainly had a large circuit. It's still in print, you know. McGraw-Hill has an Oriental edition or a Japanese or something printed. But now Dover Publications has taken it over here. And I don't know how many they're selling if they don't send me circulation figures.
How about the introduction to scientific research? Is it widely
disseminated? That is quite widely, not in the same degree as the quantum mechanics, but that was that still is in print as a paperback. McGraw-Hill discontinued the hardcover edition, but they do publish even in print as a.
And how about the book on molecular vibrations with Theseus and Cross?
That had a quite, again, not famous quantum mechanics,
yes,
it wasn't a textbook at all, but it's been quoted and cited in citations tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Dudley has some kind of a story about some kind of time curve on the number of papers in the field and how it broke and shot up when this book came out. I don't know.
Oh,
the story is.
Well, this book, was this book, was there something new in it, or was it just putting together pretty much what had been
pretty much
published
putting
in
together
papers before?
I think most of the material in there I had published before. I had actually written the book before the war. But that, I mean, the Ashcan, time flies, and hadn't made it. And that's Jack Theseus really wrote the new, the published version.
Was he one of your graduate students?
He had been a graduate student. And then went to Woods Hole with us, and back to Brown. And yes, he was. Had been a graduate student.
Yes.
Jack was very, very able.
How about your most cited papers? Or
the most cited ones, undoubtedly the book. They don't count that. But the papers on which the two papers on the FG method, they've been cited apparently a very large number of times, and with the result that, as I told you, that the one of these journals has put it in there, selected it for monthly or something like that.
Yes, it's the Scientific Information Journal, and
it's one of
some title, Citation Index or such, something like that. I know the journal.
Right.
Well, we started just be trying to summarize what you thought were your most significant scientific contributions. We didn't get through this systematically.
You know, you can catalog, you can classify things according to different kinds of importance. One of them is, do other people use it? So how's the time going? What time is your practice?
I have 15 minutes.
Oh.
We can, let me.
Before the taxi comes?